him. Like they can mutually see each other and contend with each other, it hence becomes established that he has ambassadors among his creation who speak on his behalf to his creation and servants. In this beautiful hadith, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that in reality, the necessity of prophethood stems from our understanding that, you know, there's a God who created us and who is wise. He couldn't have created us without a purpose, and he knows that purpose better than we do. However, he's not a physical being. We cannot have physical contact with him, obviously. So God, he has to send a person or a being who is similar to us and can communicate with us, you know, face to face, so that he can send that message of how to attain that that purpose for which we have been created. This is the reason why prophets were delegated and sent. In continuation, the Imam alayhi salam says the following: they, meaning the prophets, guide creation to their advantages and benefits. These prophets, they tell them what is to their advantage, what is to their benefit, and to that which will secure their survival and that which will destroy them. He tells them and informs them what will lead to their perpetuity, both in this world and in the hereafter. Right? So in essence, the reason for prophethood, it stems from certain qualities and features of Allah. The fact that he created us, the fact that he is wise and he has a purpose in his creation, and also the fact that he's not physical or corporeal, he's immaterial. These lead to and the fact that he wants to, you know, tell us what is to our benefit and what is not to our benefit. This leads to the necessity of prophethood. In essence, we want to sum it up in one word, we can say that prophethood is for our perfection and our betterment. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at what the philosophy of prophethood is in the light of the Hadith and Quran. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key, an IRIB English radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome. The intense debate within the entity regarding repercussions of the Iranian attack and the Zionist response strategy continued to take center stage in the Zionist media, which reflected an uncomfortable reality for Israelis. This is while criticisms on the failure of the aggression on Gaza to achieve its objectives remain present in the comments of analysts and experts. I'd like to go ahead and welcome my guest today, Mr. Muhammad Abed, a political analyst. Thank you very much, Mr. Muhammad, for joining us. Mr. Muhammad, I do want to start off with a question really quick on the latest developments. The Iranian Revolutionary Guards announced that if Israel does decide to attack their nuclear sites, they will go ahead and retaliate to their own nuclear sites, Israel's, of course.
Well, this is only fair because, you know, this is tit-for-tat policy, as may be mentioned here. But even within the April 13th strike, there were reports about some damage inflicted on the Dimona facilities. Some hit near the facility, and one was hit directly, but without a lot of damage being taking place there. But it was sort of a message, probably, by the Islamic Republic of Iran that if you do this to us, we are able to achieve the same against your facilities.
Well, with that, let's go ahead and continue now with the Iranian attack on the entity, which continues to haunt the minds and hearts of the Zionists as drones and missiles fell like rain, causing severe material and morale losses to the Israelis who witnessed the effects of the weapons used in the attack. Israeli social media buzz with continuous comments on the Iranian attack, seeing Netanyahu leaving Zionists to their fate and facing Iran.
Orel, I can't believe they launched this missile at us and we haven't responded yet. Limol, can you believe it? And on top of that, some are telling us not to retaliate. Sharon, the Iranians conducted an experiment on us. Next time, it will be worse if we don't respond. Han, the important thing is that we were in the fortified room. Eliano, Netanyahu hides with his family in a fortified shelter, and the people are left to confront Iran.
Well, Mr. Abed, Zionists witnessed the erosion of deterrent capabilities in their army. What reality does the occupation live in now after this Iranian attack?
So this was a sort of an event that shed the light and underscored this very fact, which started throughout the years from 1982 up till now, with the attacks of the Islamic resistance in Lebanon against the Israeli occupation forces, and went on till the year 2000 when they had to flee the country. The Israeli occupation forces had to flee the country because they could not counter the Islamic resistance and Hezbollah forces. And now they are facing it more face to face, that their weaknesses are all already there. The fact that they needed the U.S. and a lot of NATO countries in order to protect them from the Iranian drones, all these are creating a sense of insecurity among any Israeli citizen. If I'm an Israeli citizen, I'd be just thinking of way to flee the country. And a lot of them now are just looking back to find any trace where they can get a foreign passport so that they can leave the country.
Well, with that, let's go ahead and move over now to the Iranian response to the attack, targeting the consulate section in the Iranian embassy in Damascus, which was not anticipated by the Zionist intelligence or the leadership of the occupation army, a glaring failure that may have repercussions, as former Zionist war minister Avigdor Lieberman says. Well, Mr. Abed, how do you explain the failure of Zionist intelligence agencies in anticipating the Iranian attack and its implications on the security reality in the entity?
Well, yesterday, exactly, there was another failure by their intelligence, and the Hezbollah and Islamic resistance was able to attack a base that was supposed to be a secret base that was created recently. So failures are following them wherever they go. Now, what Lieberman is saying is that they need to be they need to be held accountable for this. Now, you have also to keep one possibility, which remains likely, that although Netanyahu knew that there would be an Iranian retaliation, but still he did the attack in order to have a tit-for-tat attack, and then he would have the Americans dragged into a direct conflict with the Americans. We have to keep this possibility, but of course the Americans aborted this.
Despite all the noise of debate and discussion in the political and media circles within the occupation entity about the Israeli response to the Iranian attack, ears are turned deaf in response to abound opinions about the method, nature, and size of the response, including warnings against being dragged into war with Iran and the region. What do you believe? I mean, we have the question that confuses the Zionists. What is the response, or what will it be against or in the Iranian attack? What are the reasons for these differences among their circles in the enemy Zionist entity?
Well, this is exactly their dilemma. They have to find a response that would be face saving to them, but still not angering the Iranians, meaning without producing a new retaliation. And this is sort of will be a quagmire, a sort of a problematic, because you cannot find such a response in order to find to your people. But what I read also between the lines here is the recognition of the hitting of the base that launched the main attack against the consulate in Damascus.
Mr. Abed, do you think that the entity prefers the return of American-European support and adhere to normalization instead of responding to the sake of responding, as he mentioned?
Well, he's facing a real horrible situation with the loss of all that support. And, you know, we all know that Israel is not a state that relies on itself at all. It only relies on aids and financial aid and economic aid.
Weapons and arms
and coming from allies. So now they return, and this shows the hypocrisy of the Western powers, because when they say they boycotted Israel or they want to sanction Israel, we see them rush to rescue Israel whenever it is in threat. So basically, because Israel is the project of the Western powers in the world.
How do you assess the reality experienced by the settlers in the border with Lebanon?
Well, you say what was inflicted on the Israelis is the fact what we may call the curse of the geography, because at that border was the most ferocious enemy of Israel, that is Hezbollah and the Islamic Resistance, and with all its powers, and also the curse of geography. As for them, because the north is very important because of the agriculture, because of to the east you have many resort areas and tourism taking place there. All this stopped because of the war, and this was the price they had to pay for the continuation of their massacres in Gaza, and the price was made, Hezbollah made them pay this price as long as they are continuing their massacres against Gaza.
Well, we are hearing, of course, promises from the occupation leaders to return the settlers to the settlements soon and to push Hezbollah behind the borders, as we know. In the opinion of many Zionists, these are impossible promises. What is your take on this?
Yes, of course, because the people of the South are the ones who are defending the South, and this can be proven when you see the funerals of the martyrs that fall in the South Front. They are buried in their villages, which are at the border. So this is illogical, meaning you have to expel the residents of the real owners of the land in order to make occupiers return to their land. And of course, Sayyid Nasrullah, Hassan Nasrullah, Secretary General of Hezbollah, said that these are dreams. They cannot dream of having anyone withdrawing from that area, because the aim of the existence of the resistance there is to defend these areas against an enemy which has proven to be very hostile since 1948 up till now.
Yes. Is this a recognition that the Iranian attack has not significantly altered regional alignment in favor of Israel?
Well, you may say so, but with the exception of the main Western powers we talked about earlier that rushed to defend Israel against the Iranian retaliation strike.
Because, yes, and we're talking about the Arab powers, yes.
Yes, but for the Arabs, no. Also, you have Jordan that was involved directly.
Yes.
There were reports about the Saudis opening their airspace to the Israeli warplanes. So things will have to wait a little bit in order to be clarified. But no, they still maintain. It's like when you have a son and you probably punish him for a little bit, but if he's in real threat, you rush to rescue him. And so I don't think things are that strict of them losing the support of Westerners and the Arab normalizers.
Mr. Abed, why are the doubts increasing about the usefulness of continuing this aggression on Gaza in Zionist political, media, and public circles instead of demanding a ceasefire and, of course, the prisoner exchange deal?
I think we should ask it the other way around, because what outcome did we see? What positive goals were achieved or objectives that were declared at the beginning of the campaign?
You mean
campaign
from the Zionist entity
side?
Yes.
So nothing was achieved. So it took them too long, 6 months, to realize this. So that's why we hear all these voices. They want a price to be paid and then to have the swap.
But do you think they have actually realized this? 6 months after,
well,
have they realized
everybody,
this?
I think everybody realizes this, and even Netanyahu. But Netanyahu wants to remain in power in order to remain out of prison, because as long as this is possible.
Here, accusations are also leveled against Netanyahu and his government for obstructing ceasefire negotiations and, of course, the exchange deal, despite the failure to undermine the resistance. Your opinion on this?
Yes, and this is true, because it is against their interest to have any sort of swap or exchange, because this underlines the real defeat of Israel. They doing what they promised not to do since the October 7th attack. Then you had them saying that we will eradicate Hamas, we will free the prisoners, they call them the hostages, without any prices, etc., etc., and nothing was achieved. But still, they are stubborn enough in order to try to prolong the suffering of the Palestinians. But here you have to take into account one small thing, that is,
yes,
probably they are also, they want to have anyone think that whenever you do such an attack, such as that of the October 7th, you will be paying this price with massacres and over 30,000 martyrs and so.
In Palestine. Amid ongoing Arab and international communications about Gaza's future after the end of the war, the Israeli media leaked information about an Arab international project to hand over the sector to a NATO force for 5 years, paving the way for the establishment of an alternative authority to Hamas. Well, Mr. Abed, I do actually have a few questions on this part. So an international force, possibly NATO or similar, the day after the end of the war in Gaza, I mean, how do you assess such a project and, of course, its practicality?
Well, but before you have to give this Gaza Strip to another power, you have to remove the power that is already there and which the Israelis have failed to do. So, I mean, Hamas, they were not able to defeat Hamas up till now.
Yes.
Look, what they are doing here, you have to read between the lines. Like the same as we have here in Lebanon with the UNIFIL forces. The UNIFIL are not here to protect Lebanon. They are to protect Israel from Lebanon. And this is what they need from such a NATO force or any other force. They want protection from the Palestinians and the effort and the mission that they failed to do of eradicating that threat of the Palestinian resistance.
Exactly. It's actually noteworthy to go ahead and mention that this project to establish the international force in the Gaza Strip is being discussed with multiple Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Egypt, and Jordan. What does that mean?
These are the normalizing countries, and these are the countries also that...
So it's expected.
At least suspected of assisting the Israelis with their to counter the Iranian attack. It's only logical to expect this from them, whatever is in the interest of Israel,
yes,
for them to rush to try to help in this regard.
I'd like to go ahead and thank you very much, Mr. Mohammed Abed, a political analyst, for joining us for our show today.
You're most welcome. My pleasure.
Thank you very much. Until next time, salam.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering the doubts and questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو إذا الرحمن
Allah
هو إذا المنان
لا إله إلا.
Please send us your emails to our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Call of Islam page, well, welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program, and the special guest speaker for today's discussion is Shaykh Rouhani. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, Shaykh Rouhani, for today's discussion, we want to talk about Iran's support for Palestinians and the people and the children of Gaza. Some people might ask that Iran and Islamic Republic of Iran is a Shiite land and they follow Shia Islam. Whether we can say the Palestinians and the people of Palestine are Sunni ones. Why a Shiite land is helping a Sunni one, and why so many of the Sunni lands, we can say, are silent regarding the oppressions and the atrocities that are taking place by the Zionist regime in Palestine. What would be the answer, Sheikh?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, within Islamic, let's say, Ummah and nation, we have two main theological school. One is Adliya,
yes,
who believe in Adala of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in justice of God. And there is the opposite of this is the idea that they do not believe in the divine justice.
Okay.
So Shia and Mu'tazila are the two main schools or theological school in Islam who believe in adl, in justice of God as well as justice of the human being. So performing justice and fulfilling justice in our, let's say, religious life is something that is that among the main or the principal belief of tashayyu. Shia Muslims believe in there are five main principles of Islam according to Shia. The first one is tawheed, the second one is adala.
Yes.
This adala requires that wherever you are, whatever you can, you have to do for the oppressed ones. Because Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not oppressor, and the khulafa of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the prophets and imams are not oppressors. And then the people who are the leaders of the ummah after the a'imma and the time of major occultation, they should also fulfill justice. They should also not be oppressive. They should also fight against oppression. Whatever they can do, they should do against oppressors. That's why we see that the anbiya, the prophets alayhi salatu wasalam, Prophet Nuh, Prophet Ibrahim, Prophet Musa alayhi salatu wasalam, all the prophets, they fought against oppression. And yes, then the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam fought against oppression. Then the a'imma alayhi salatu wasalam again fought against tyranny and oppression.
Yes.
Then we have the ruler of fuqaha and the jurists and the ulama in the history of the tashayyu, that they also fought against oppression in their own lives.
Okay.
So nowadays, if you see that...
So this is not merely a political support.
No, it is based on... It is based
Islamic
on
teachings.
Islamic teachings.
Yes.
If you believe in adala of God, and if you believe in adala for the human being and justice, then of course it means that you have to fulfill justice, you have to perform justice and in your life, social life, political life, economic life, even personal life. So that is the thing that is rooted in Islamic main teachings and doctrines. It is not only a mere kind of political decision. We know that the Shia people believe that mujtahid or marja'i taqlid should be adil. Or the imam of jama'ah, when they pray congregational prayer, the imam of jama'ah, the leader of jama'ah, he should also be adil. Otherwise, no one should be led by this imam in their congregational prayer, and no one should do taqlid or follow the mujtahid who is not adil and just. So what is this justice? One of the manifestations of this justice is to resist against the oppression.
Yes.
To do something against oppression. To that extent that you can. You know, sometimes, for example, you can do lots of things.
Yes.
But sometimes, no. The thing that is possible for you that you can do, you should do. Against oppression, against tyranny, against injustice, you know. That is why what we see nowadays, that the tashayyu mostly support the oppressed people of Palestine.
Yes.
It is... It rooted in their Islamic beliefs,
yes,
in their Islamic ideas.
Uh-huh.
It makes no difference whether this Shia is from Iran or from Yemen or from Lebanon, from Syria, from Iraq, from wherever they are. They always try to do something against oppression. Not only in Palestine, everywhere, if they can do anywhere, do something against oppression, they would do, because it is a kind of main religious belief.
Yes. And you know that the major attacks of Islamic Republic of Iran and Israel, there was a direct attack by Israelis on the Iranians' consulate in Damascus, okay?
Yes.
So the piece of land of Iran was attacked. And you know, up until then, you know, Iran has tolerated all these oppressions and atrocities, and then because the land was attacked by the Israelis, it started attack because a piece of its land in another country. And we know that consulate is an office, official office, and the piece of land of a country put in another country.
IRIB English Radio presents questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@IRIB.IR.
Praises to Allah, all glory to Allah. We worship Allah and no one but Allah.
But all in all, as you said, Iran and Islamic Republic of Iran as a Shiite land is after the rights of the Mazlumin and Mustazafin. And this has been the motto of the late Imam Khomeini, isn't it? Shaykh Rouhani.
Yes, of course. It is the motto of the Tashayyu all across the world and also throughout the history. One point that I could mention is this, that, you know, we have an international law. We have a concept or a term. It is called self-defense.
Yes.
The right of self-defense.
Okay.
You know, every nation, every country, every state, according to this international law, they have the right to defend themselves, to defend their own people, their own territory, their own country. As you rightly mentioned, the embassies are part of the land of the country to which it belongs. That is why when it is attacked, it is exactly like this, that that country is directly attacked by the enemy. So here, according to the international law, the country has this right to defend itself against the enemy. That's why what Iran did was based on this right of self-defense.
Yes.
That is accepted by all nations across the world, based on this kind of international law.
Yes.
Iran and any country had this, have this right to defend themselves when they are attacked.
Okay. I would like to play something for you and find a contradiction in, we can say, some of the so-called officials of the foreign countries. This is David Cameron, the Minister of the Foreign Affairs of the Britain. Okay, let's listen to that, see how much contradictory is he talking about.
A reckless and dangerous thing for Iran to have done. And I think the whole world can see all these countries that have somehow wondered, well, you know, what is the true nature of Iran? It's there in black and white.
What would Britain do if a hostile nation flattened one of our consulates?
Well, we would take, you know, we would take the very strong action.
And Iran would say that that's what they did?
Well, what they did, as I said, was a massive attack.
So they were right to respond, but they overreacted, is what you're saying?
What I'm saying is that the attack they carried out was on a very large scale, much bigger than people accepted.
They have a right to respond.
Well, countries have a right to respond when they feel they've suffered an aggression. Of course they do. But look at the scale of that response. Had those weapons not been shot down, there could have been thousands of casualties, including civilian casualties. I think that's a really important point to take into account.
All right, this one's David Cameron. It says, you know, the journalist over there asks him, what would happen if, for example, your consulate is attacked, and said, our reaction will be severe, okay? So it's Iran, what Iran did. And, you know, this was the art of the Iranians, Shaykh, to attack the military bases without killing the civilians, you know?
Yes.
No civilians were killed. But, you know, every day in the Gaza Strip, the innocent children, the infants are being killed.
Yes, unfortunately.
The fathers, the parents carrying the limbs of their children in the plastics, you know. This is really sad for such people like David Cameron to talk about, we can't say,
this is
rights of war or something like that.
This is the double standard that we have in our world, and the people of Palestine suffered a lot, but no one care. While at the same time, they say that no civilian casualties should be there, but of course there are thousands of them, but no one care. You know, this is human right. This is democracy. This is, let's say, children's right, women's right, animals' right. All these mottos, all the slogans that are always, let's say, followed by the Westerners.
Yes.
But they have their double standards. Here it is good, but there it's bad.
Okay.
This is what we see, you know.
They say that,
unfortunately,
that's right.
Yes.
Okay, Shaykh Rouhani. This also, I think, was a nice motivation for some of the Muslim lands in order to defend more. the rights of the Palestinians over there, isn't it? I mean, it is not a good time to be silent. You know, so many of the official organizations all around the world, so-called humanitarian ones, are silent now, including the Muslim ones. What do you think the attacks of Iran and Israel, you know, has a message for the Muslim lands and the Islamic governments and the states?
You know, of course, when your land, your country is attacked, of course, you have the right to defend yourself. It is according to the international law. There's no any doubt about which. That's why no one can condemn Iran for this attack, because Iranians defend themselves based on that international law.
Mm-hmm.
Same is the case with the other nations, with all the countries. If they are attacked also, they can defend themselves. And of course, since Iran is the main among the main supporters of the poor Palestinians, the oppressed ones,
yes,
that's why, of course, it can encourage other nations, particularly Muslims, to raise their voice and to defend and to resist against this kind of oppression that's going on against Muslims of Palestine. Yeah, that is, that gives this message, it conveys this message to the other nations as well.
That's all right. Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you. We really thank the IRGC and all, we can say, the Navy and the military forces of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is not only my gratitude, but the whole Islamic lands, you know, on these recent attacks on Israel over there, you know, and defending the rights of the Mazlumin and Mustazafin all across the world. Maybe this was a good lesson for all those people who are following the superpowers around the world. You know, this is a lesson. Do not be misled by the materialistic loves around the world, you know. Rights of the children of the Gaza and the innocent children of the Gaza who have been killed, you know, must not be violated. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, too, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min labani Ali wa Husayni wa Hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means to appoint.
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala
has decreed. His decree, though.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Foresight, and I'm your host, Mehdi. Please stay with us. كل شيء ومليك يا رب كل شيء وصانع يا خالق كل شيء وورث. Today's tip: prayers, salah, tranquility and ubudiyya. So, dear listeners, we are talking about our prayers, we're talking about our salah, our at least our wajib, obligatory five daily prayers of the day. And we're talking about tranquility, and we're talking about ubudiyya, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to Allah. Now, we're all trying to look for a little peace of mind and tranquility and serenity and calm. Unfortunately, in the world that we live in, because these non-Islamic systems and these non-God-oriented systems are prevalent all across the world, we find that these systems, because they're trying to attain their own selfish interests, are in reality contradictory to and in opposition to the interests of human being. Now, you kind of start to think, well, who is it that will delineate and list and explain what are the different benefits of a human being? Well, this is where Islam comes into play, right? And a little bit of a theological discussion, and that is that Allah is the creator, and so the creator will know best what it is that is in the best interest of the human being. And so it is Islam that teaches us what the best interests of human beings are. And if we look on the practical level and on the ground, we will find that it is Islamic teachings, and it is the Holy Quran and the teachings of the Messenger of Allah and the infallible Imams, peace and blessings upon them all, that bring this self-interest of a human being to its peak and bring about tranquility and peace of mind and calm. We look across, you know, the various different other non-God-oriented systems and non-Islamic systems of the world, you will find that people still are looking for some sort of calm and peace of mind and tranquility. But unfortunately, because they are non-God-oriented systems, well, they can't teach you those things that God can teach you. And so people resort to pharmaceutical drugs, antidepressants, sleep medications, and all of these things are incredibly addictive, by the way. Or they have turned people towards quote-unquote entertainment, which is really the poisoning of the soul, or social media, and how that is incredibly addictive, as well as alcohol and drugs and fornication, excuse me, adultery, prostitution, and the list goes on, and it's very unfortunate. When in reality, Allah has clearly delineated all those things that will bring about tranquility and peace of mind to the heart.
Ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Mannan.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
Ya Allah, ya Rahman, haqqiq amanina, waffiqna fi kulli an. يا الله يا منان حقق أمانينا وفقنا في كل في مساعينا.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today we're on the streets of Melbourne talking to people to see just how much they really know about Islam. So what do you know about Islam?
I live in a predominantly white area, so I don't know a whole lot, but I do like to think of myself as well kind of learned in that kind of area.
Very little, pretty much nothing. I know that it's a religion.
Yeah, you know that it's a religion?
Yeah.
Not much, to be honest. I'm not very religious myself, but I know that the public eye is being changed to, you know, look at them differently.
Yeah.
in my eyes, it's, I don't know, it's just a bit confusing. Yeah.
It's a religion.
Yep.
What do I know about it? Yeah, they've got the Quran, which is like their Bible.
Yep.
They got Ramadan. This level. And yeah, I really don't know that much about it, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you know that it's a religion of peace, and it's not obviously how the media portrays it to be?
Yeah.
Oh, like the bad stuff, really?
Yeah.
Not really any good stuff about it.
Yeah.
Just what the news shows us.
Yeah. Well, that is the negative propaganda that we're here to clear, man. Yeah. So, basically, Islam's just a religion of peace. Basically, we're taught that we're not allowed to kill any innocent people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's completely against the religion. If you do kill any innocent people, you go straight to hell. So basically, everything that that's happening in the name of Islam is false. So, you know, people will associate anything with, like, anyone they want to, you know. Do you know what Ramadan is?
Yeah, I do. It's the month of fasting.
It's the month of fasting?
I just know it's when Islamic people, they fast for a week, is that right?
A month.
Month, okay. I know, yeah, just about that, but I don't understand anything behind it.
It's like fasting or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so Muslims fast for a month. Yeah, so we fast for 30 days, 29 days, according to the lunar calendar, the moon, the Islamic calendar. And so basically, yeah, we just fast for 30 days. We try to get closer to God and that kind of thing in those 30 days. Do you know where Mecca is?
I believe it's in Jerusalem. I could be wrong.
It's in Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
No. I know it's... Is it like north or something? I don't know. I know it's in a certain place.
It is actually north, northwest.
Yeah?
But it's in Saudi Arabia.
Mecca is in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
Mecca is a city in Saudi Arabia. It's got the Kaaba in there. It's a place where Muslims go for pilgrimage. You're supposed to go once in your lifetime. If you're able, if you have the means, if you're not, you know, if you don't have an injury or that kind of thing. Do you know if Muslims believe in Jesus?
I think that they don't, but I'm not too positive on the actual truth of that, so...
As I said before, I'm not very religious, I don't really look into that much. All I see is, you know, the propaganda, as you said before, in the news stories, but, yeah, I don't, personally, I don't dive into all the facts behind it, so...
Mm. I think Jesus is... I'm not actually sure, but I thought he may be one of the prophets, or is it?
That is very correct. Yeah.
I reckon some of them would.
Yeah.
Like, well, maybe not all of them.
Yeah. Well, all Muslims are taught that we have to believe in Jesus. We believe that Jesus was a messenger of God, and we believe that the Bible was revealed to him. We don't believe that he's the Son of God or that he's a God himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. We believe that there is only one God, and there are no partners associated with him.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. And so what we were saying, was that this idea of tranquility and peace of mind and our daily prayers. And so when it comes to our daily prayers, you know, this is something that really does bring us tranquility. Now, sometimes we might say that, you know, daily prayers, salah, wajib prayers, you know, this doesn't bring me any tranquility. Well, the problem most probably is that you're not paying attention, you're not focusing, you're not putting your heart into these daily prayers. Otherwise, these daily prayers, they do bring us this peace of mind, and they do bring us this tranquility that we're looking for. And for example, so, you know, we read the Quran, but we don't read the translation or we don't feel its effects. Well, perhaps we're not reading the Quran with sincerity, or we're not reading the Quran, you know, with attention or focus, right? Otherwise, these daily prayers and the recitation of the Quran, they do bring us tranquility. They do help us to be able to connect with Allah, and it is in essence, it is that connection with Allah which is bringing about our tranquility. It's nothing other than that, right? Don't think that the prayers or the du'as and the supplications or the salah or the hajj, you know, or for example the recitation of the Quran in and of itself, you know, independent, is what is ultimately bringing us tranquility. No, these are all means that help us to connect to Allah. So, well, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, we're quite cunning in the negative sense, and we say, well, we don't have to do any of these things, we'll just have a connection with Allah, and that'll bring us tranquility. You know, yes, having a connection with Allah, having a conversation with Allah, feeling close to Allah will bring about a certain level of tranquility. But there's a difference between, you know, a improper dose of medication and a proper dose of medication. And so an improper dose of medication is this regular conversation and this kind of thing that we want to establish a connection with Allah to bring us tranquility. But the proper dose is that dose which Allah, the Creator, has put forth for the self-interest of humanity. And Allah has said that if you want a proper dose of medication for tranquility, that is the daily prayers, that is the recitation of the Quran, that is reading about the history and the seerah and the sunnah of the Messenger of Allah and the infallible and immaculate Imams alayhim wasalam. This is the proper dose. So sure, you know, an improper dose will kind of get us along the way, but it's not going to help us as much as that proper dose. And that's something that we need to realize. And this proper dose of salah, or for example, reading the Quran, or, you know, having some research or reading about the lives and the manners of the Messenger of Allah and the infallible Imams alayhim wasalam, this proper dose is what will truly bring us tranquility, and it will bring a long-term tranquility, and it is what will truly cure us, right? Why resort to an improper dose when you have the proper dose, right? So inshallah, this will help us in our ubudiyah. It will bring about tranquility in our lives, inshallah. And like we said, most importantly, it will increase and strengthen and level up our ubudiyah, our worship, our servitude, and our obedience to Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at farstoday.ir. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. أنسي وملاذي أحتمي بحماه حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير حسبنا الله حسبنا الله حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل حسبنا الله حسبنا الله حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل
Welcome to Have It Out with Galloway, where every week we have out the great issues of the day. As the Rolling Stones once sang, this could be the last time. By which I mean it is distinctly possible that by next week's show, the world will be engulfed in war. Certainly the region from the Atlantic Ocean to the Persian Gulf may very well be in flames. This is because, fundamentally, of the behavior of the apartheid state of Israel, the European colonial state of Israel, which for 75 years has tormented, has tortured, has murdered, displaced, and dispersed millions of Palestinian people. And Iran's long-standing and absolutely sincere conviction that it is a duty, a religious duty, a duty in humanity to stand by the Palestinian people. Make no mistake about it. If Iran did not stand with Palestine, none of what's happening, none of what's being said and threatened would be remotely the case. Iran would be courted, as it once was, as a potential ally for the West in the East. Iran would be a darling, as it once was, of the Western Empire. But Iran has never given up on the Palestinian people, even when others have. I spoke in the House of Commons yesterday. I'm trending in Twitter in the UK because, frankly, I was the only adult in the room, pointing out that the Prime Minister of Britain made a lengthy statement about the events of last weekend without a single word of condemnation or even a single word at all about the blatantly, brazenly illegal, violent, fatally violent act conducted by the apartheid state on the 1st of April in Damascus. As I said in the Parliament yesterday, not one word did the Prime Minister say about the destruction of the Iranian consulate in Damascus in violation of the Vienna Convention, in violation of all rules and laws of the United Nations Charter and of international law. And yet, obviously, the events on the 1st of April were the proximate cause, reason for the events of last weekend over in the skies over the apartheid state. But not one word was mentioned until I rose to my feet. The fact that my intervention has now been viewed by millions and millions of people, when so many dozens of people spoke, many of them much more powerful than me in terms of the positions that they hold. The fact that it is my intervention that is dominating the public discourse proves something very important. The British public are not fools. They know essentially what's going on in the Middle East, and that Palestine is the heart of the matter. The massacre of 35,000 and more, most of them women and children, trapped in a cage with nowhere to run, with nowhere to hide, with no anti-aircraft potential, no aircraft, no warships, no bomb shelters, not like the bunker that Netanyahu spent the weekend in the basement of the house of an American billionaire in Tel Aviv. The truth is, the British public and the Western public know that their governments are on the road to nowhere, making ourselves more and more hated, more and more imperiled and in danger, our interests damaged everywhere by our unending support for a tiny little country of just a few million people on the Mediterranean. We'll be discussing with the first-rate, first-line, top-class guest, Dr. Syed Mohammed Marandi from the University of Tehran. This is Have It Out with Galloway. Professor Syed Mohammed Marandi is the head of the American Studies Department at the University of Tehran. He's become a very familiar face and voice in Western media because he's not easy for them to dismiss. He's not easy for them to rubbish. He speaks the language. He speaks the language of wisdom, of international diplomacy, statecraft, and the language of finding solutions to problems rather than exacerbating them. I frequently have the honor of having him as a guest on my shows, and I have that honor again today. Now, very dangerous times, Professor. Welcome to the show. Will this be my last show? Is there going to be an all-out war by next week?
Well, I hope we are all able to benefit from your excellent show for a very long time. I do think it's quite possible that there will be an escalation. If the Israeli regime says they're going to target Iranians again, then if they don't do so, it would be a humiliation in itself. So I think they've put themselves in a position where they feel that they have to carry out an attack. And this is where I think the West miscalculates and misunderstands, because the West constantly believes its own propaganda, like in Ukraine, where the Ukrainians were always winning, and then suddenly everyone sees that they're losing. It's because of the Western propaganda that has for 2 years been saying that they've been wiping out the Russian armed forces, and then suddenly everyone wakes up to the reality that Kiev is under threat. In the case of Iran and the Israeli regime, the Israelis have lost in Gaza on the battlefield. They've lost on the border with Lebanon on the battlefield. They've created hatred for the regime across the globe because of the genocide. And after striking the Iranian embassy, the globe was outraged. The European countries and the United States are marginalized nowadays in the international community. They, of course, support the strike on the embassy, which is seen as outrageous, just as their support for the genocide is seen as outrageous across the globe. But their propaganda basically has been that the Israelis won when the Iranians struck back and retaliated and punished Israel for the airstrike, whereas that is absolutely not the case. It is the opposite. The Iranians sent large numbers of very inexpensive and old drones, each costing at most $10,000. And they told the world well in advance, because the Iranians wanted to draw fire towards those drones. They wanted the Israeli regime and the Americans to throw everything they had at the drones. And that's what they did. So the Iranians spent maybe a couple of million dollars on the drones, and the Israelis spent over $1.3 billion in missiles to shoot down those drones. And they didn't get any intelligence from Iran because they were all old, and the Iranians gained a huge amount of intelligence about Israeli and U.S. capabilities. And of course, they depleted their reserves of drones, whereas Iran has endless amounts of drones and missiles. Then the Iranians fired a number of older missiles, again, no new technology, getting rid of these old missiles. They also were, like the drones, fired to draw the anti-aircraft missiles towards themselves, and they were successful as well. So these drones and those older missiles, which had as I said, no new technology in them for the West or Israel to discover, they all fulfilled their objective. They forced the other side to